You've heard me talk about Morning Kick, used by former karate champion Chuck Norris. It's a daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes similar to strawberry lemonade, and I enjoy it. I know I don't eat as many vegetables as I should, but Morning Kick has helped me make up for that, and I feel great. I have more energy and better digestion. It's an easy part of my morning routine. My wife started taking it as well. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris today.
Welcome once again to the Conversations That Matter podcast. I'm here with Dr. Paul Gottfried, who is the editor-in-chief of Chronicles magazine, which I encourage everyone to subscribe to, former professor of humanities at Elizabethtown College in Pennsylvania, and you've written, I don't know how many books, a lot.
15.
Is it 15?
15 books.
Yeah, and well worth the time to read those books. Mm-hmm. The latest one I know is on paleoconservatism, an anthology.
Yeah.
It's like 90 bucks.
Yeah, that one is vastly overpriced, but my books on fascism, anti-fascism, revisions and descents, they're all published by Cornell, and they're much cheaper.
Okay.
So I recommend any of those books.
If you can't afford 90.
Right.
So I want to talk a little bit about liberalism, wokeism, how you conceive of these things. You just wrote an article, and I think this is a good springboard, mm-hmm. on how Marx wasn't woke, essentially. Mm-hmm. And this got a lot of attention, most notably James Lindsay calling you an idiot and
yes.
saying you didn't know what liberalism was.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to just hear from you, because I read the article. I thought it was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And what were you trying to, what was the thesis that you were trying to communicate?
Well, one of the things I have that obviously has exasperated me in recent years is that the conservative movement claims that they're fighting communism or socialism. That's the real enemy. At the same time, I see the conservative movement of what there is on TV, media conservatism, making its peace with gay marriage, transgendered, providing they're Republican transgendered, and talking with them about the dangers of socialism. And it dawned on me that there are ulterior motives for this. Number one, by talking about the enemy being socialism, you continue a form of rhetoric that was taken over during the Cold War against communism, and the right is fighting against socialism, which is a return to serfdom and so forth. So what you're doing is you're telling people, you're reassuring them that you have the same enemies as before, depicting the Chinese as communists rather than as radical, ruthless nationalists, but stressing the communist affiliation is also a way of keeping old associations alive. And finally, I think the conservative movement doesn't want to fight the woke left. It prefers fighting an easier enemy, which is socialism. And they seem to ignore, however, there's a close alliance between corporate capitalism and wokeness. Now, you did have people who were Marxist, claimed to be Marxist, who were rich and occasionally, expanded their wealth. I mean, someone like George Soros is obviously wealthy, and he's clearly on the left. So that is possible. But what I argue is that wokeness has very little to do with Marxism. It does use a narrative or a sort of structure its narrative around the struggle of the suffering just against the virtuous people who are going to win in the end. But then this is a biblical theme that has been recycled by any number of movements for the last few thousand years. So there's nothing peculiarly Marxist about this. It's rather that Marx used or recycled in his own way a biblical narrative that, whether it's the Messianic age in the Old Testament, the victory of the righteous in the New Testament, who the followers of Christ, who will win in the end. this is not anything peculiar to Marxism. And what I do is I try to define what is the nature of wokeness. I say it is of the left because it is claims to be universalist. It talks about helping the downtrodden, which has become not entirely, but mostly a leftist theme, and talks about equality, compensatory justice. These are all leftist themes. But once you move beyond that, we're clearly not talking about Marxism. Marxism is about class struggle within a dialectic materialist historical framework. Wokeism has nothing to do with this. Marxists in practice have been very conservative. I mean, they've put homosexuals in concentration camps. They favor traditional marital relations. All the things that wokeness rejects in the end. Also, Marxists are not specifically anti-white. You know, you have Marxists who support, even support nationalist movements. And a Marxist today, certainly the communist parties in Eastern Europe, take conservative positions. In Russia, the Communist Party or its successor party voted against gay marriage and teaching gay doctrines in public schools. So clearly the Marxists and the woke agendas are very different. So that is one argument. The other point that I made in that article to which you refer is that liberalism is not something which people are now defending against wokeness. Rather, what you have is some kind of decadent liberalism. Liberalism in its last phase, represented by people who are on the cultural social left, like Barry Weiss or Douglas Murray.
Right.
James Lindsay, who's a crusading atheist. These are hardly traditional liberals, certainly in the sense in which I use the term in my book After Liberalism, which is people who favor what is a bourgeois idea of limited government, restricted franchise, and who accept traditional biblical views on family relations. This is what liberals were in the 19th century. They also favored academic freedom, but up only up to a point. And the point was it had to be compatible with social decency.
So Thomas Jefferson?
Yes, would be a liberal. But then in Europe you have many liberals, like François Guizot in France, who is the Protestant premier or prime minister under Louis Philippe in the 1830s and 1840s, who wanted a restricted franchise because he thought that most people were incapable of exercising sound political judgment, you know, and they were not part of what he called la classe capacitaire, a class that is capable of exercising proper political judgment. Liberals did not favor feminism. They typically were against allowing women to vote. So, I mean, this to me is the liberal tradition.
So not egalitarian, favoring a natural aristocracy of some kind.
Mm-hmm, a natural aristocracy and constitutional restraints on government.
Yeah.
You know, and accepting a distinction between civil society and government, which is totally broken down by now.
Yeah. I want to talk about the failures of liberalism. But before I do, though, just to put to rest the assertion that you don't know what you're talking about when it comes to Marxism. Mm-hmm. I know you had reviewed my book for Chronicles, Christianity and Social Justice.
Right.
And in that book, I want to see if you agree with this. I tried to take a step back. I started at the French Revolution, mm-hmm. as you might mm-hmm. remember, and just talk about this egalitarian impulse to flatten everything, all the hierarchies, and that this Marxism is one iteration of this,
right?
But it's only one iteration. Mm-hmm. There are many. Is that how you conceive of
Absolutely.
This?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. That there is a left broadly understood. This is the right broadly understood. And the left believes in equality and a strong government to enforce equality. And they go beyond, you know, giving everybody the vote is instrumental. It's an attempt to create a government and a social system in which there'll be redistribution of income, and it typically assumes a very powerful administrative state. They're also universalists. They do not like particularity. right? Like nations, although in France now you have people who call themselves, you know, left-wing nationalists, but if you look at them, they're basically nationalists. And you know they're universalists, they're globalists, the left. I mean, even the left that we have now, and you know, which hates white people, hates males, hates Christians, and whatever, they still call themselves globalists because globalism is the essence of the left. It's part of its essence, together with equality, and ultimately, I think, with this powerful government that engages in massive social engineering. So those are all features of the left. The right accepts hierarchy. The right accepts nationalism or particularity.
Right.
It accepts gender distinctions, right? And it is generally sympathetic to Christianity.
So liberalism failed in your estimation, which has paved the way for wokeism. I should probably read. This is one of the closing lines in your article. You
right.
say this. At some point in the last 20 years, the very ideal of open discussion and debate fell into disrepute, both in institutions of higher learning and in the media. What had become a shrunken, denatured liberalism was abandoned for a successor ideology, wokeism.
That's right.
So this is the question I think a lot of people have, is if liberalism, as you described it, has failed, how do we fight back against this? What do you do if you're not going to use liberalism as the way to fight back against
it? Yeah, what I'm saying is it's becoming more increasingly ineffective as a weapon. And, you know, I think we're discussing, you know, what do you do with universities, for instance? Well, you know, there are these organizations which are going to defend you against extreme wokeness. But if you look more closely, you find that they simply are made up of people who are on the left.
Right.
You know, and we're still essentially leftist, but things, you know, things have just gone too far.
Right.
And what
right.
they do is they typically idolize the way the world was, the way universities were 20 or 30 years ago. Well, having attended universities back in the 1960s, having done my graduate work at Yale and so forth, let me assure you that they weren't that much better, you know, and there was still hostility toward the right that was very much evident. And we had was simply a civil war on the left. And what is losing side now want to take back power from the more extreme left. So they're not going to really have open discussion. They're not going to run around hiring conservatives or even conservative libertarians. Conservative Christians are not going to be. What they want are more people. At the University of Austin, which Barry Weiss put together, there were just left liberals who had falling outs with people who are farther to the left. And that this is what I mean, that you cannot return to this, because by the time, you know, people turned on Barry Weiss, it was pretty much over. And she and her friends do not represent, you know, a real ideal of open discussion that is open to the right. Right?
Yeah.
So
you know, I remember a few years ago, this was in 2020 at CPAC. I'll probably never go to the conference again personally,
right,
but
right.
I was still under the impression this is a very conservative conference. And, you know, I show up and there's a transgendered person,
right.
Miss Matt, Lady MAGA, and they had, you know, Atheists for Liberty and all these different rainbow flags at the Tea Party USA booth. There was hardly a Christian presence at all.
Right.
There was nothing about the founders. And James Lindsay actually was there. And I remember talking to him, and he said, one of the things he said was interesting. He said, I never thought I would be at CPAC, he says, because I'm not a conservative. I'm more kind of like a moderate leftist. He didn't say leftist, but liberal. Liberal.
Liberal. Well, that, of course, that probably means moderate leftist.
Today,
you know,
in
his usage.
So it's interesting, though, now he's categorized on the right. And he's very accepted at a place like CPAC and the intelligent. So is this a crucial mistake that pale conservatives are making in alliancing themselves with this losing faction on the left? You think so?
It's losing for us because we don't agree with this, but if you're part of the conservative establishment, you want friends on the left, because that's where the action, the money, that's where professional advantage is for you. So what you want to do is you always cultivate good friends on the left, and you push out or you engage in gatekeeping when it comes to people on your right. But you don't need them, really, right? What do you have to worry about the right? You just want friends who have influence and who are acceptable to the media. The German word Salonfähig comes here. They're sort of, you know, people who be led into a salon or a party, and the people on the right don't belong there. So from their point of view, what they're doing makes perfectly good sense. It's professionally useful to do this. They don't want me. They want people, but not you. They want the people who write for The Atlantic.
Right.
Or The New York Times. They want to write for The New York Times.
They'd love to. Yeah, we see this in Christianity with Russell Moore and David French.
Yes.
And you know, I could go on.
You picked the two best examples.
Did I? Yeah. Well, Tim Keller's another one. They all write for outlets like The Washington Post, The New York Times, and then they just slam the very people they're supposed to represent.
Right, right.
And that's somehow being prophetic or being winsome. Or one of the things that I think the huge strength that you have is explaining true, authentic conservatism. You call it paleoconservatism. For those who just listen to Fox News or The Daily Wire, could you break that down for specifically a Christian audience who is wanting, they're interested in protecting marriage and those kinds of things, but they've been listening to Sean Hannity and Ben Shapiro. How do you introduce paleoconservatism? What is it?
Well, no, the word paleoconservatism is a term that I coined in writing the first edition of what became the conservative movement. And I don't know whether Tom Fleming or I, who's my co-author, came up with that term. But I think what it referred to were those people on the right who resisted neoconservative takeover in the 1980s. And, you know, the term is fine, but I'm not wedded to that term, you know. And we have a younger generation, and they sometimes use this, like Pedro Gonzalez, our assistant editor, and he says, well, we're paleo. I said, you don't even have to use that term. You're not required. It's my generation.
Well, we need a term. We need something to describe.
But you are on the traditional right, traditional religious right or something like that. And obviously, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to be happy with gay marriage, aligning yourself with transgendered, right, or critical race theory. Now, I'm sure David French has no problem with any of these things.
No, he says he's conservative too, which is the funny part.
Right, right. Yeah. And you remember, National Review wanted to run him for president in 2016. He was their choice.
That's right. And to see where he's gone since 2000. I mean, in 2015, I don't know if you remember, he wrote an article for National Review defending the Confederate flag displayed in South.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I can send it to you.
That's remarkable.
It's in National Review. It's a picture of the Confederate battle flag, and he's defending it. And this is, I can't even believe David French wrote it, because today that would be considered so on the right that he would want to run from it.
Well, but they do move very fast to the left.
it's at breakneck speed.
Right.
But the whole pale, I mean, some younger conservatives, as you just mentioned, they don't use paleo, but they'll say something like, I'm a based conservative. That's a new term. Or they just want to distinguish themselves from these compromisers. What's the essence, though, of whatever that is, whether it's paleoconservatism or there's another term? You described some of it, but there's a rootedness, it seems, to it that's much richer and deeper than the neoconservative.
Right. No. It's richer because these are the people who are defending an older conservatism, not necessarily the conservatism of Bill Buckley and National Review. You know, even in the 50s and 60s, some of them were defending the conservatism of the 1930s. You know. Become part of this coalition. But in any case, they rejected what the neoconservatives were doing, which was basically making an alliance with the left, excluding people who've been part of the conservative movement before, demeaning the Southern heritage. Why would you do this? These people were integral parts of the conservative movement. They always have been.
Right.
You know, why are you kicking them out? And then, of course, trying to build bridges to the left and committing the United States to a global democratic foreign policy, which I thought was sheer insanity. That's why they went after me and destroyed me professionally, because I dared to challenge their globalist neo-Wilsonian foreign policy. It was not on other issues. It started on that. Later on, what they do is they tar their opponents as anti-Semites or racist or some. The war was pretty much over far. And it's interesting that you get neo-isolationism, people who want to restrain foreign policy. All these things are acceptable in a certain part of the right, even in the conservative movement, you can say these things. You couldn't say them back in the 1980s when the neocons were taking over.
So do you have hope then? It sounds like
yeah,
you might
yeah.
have some hope for the movement. Or...
You know, I do have hope for the populist
yeah.
elements, of the younger people who are populist. I wish them well. And they tend to be more conservative on social, cultural issues, just about everything, and all these other things. And basically, they see themselves in alliance with what I suppose is the predominantly white working class. They don't exclude other people, but it's not
right.
the white working class in America. And, you know, it's traditional religious, cultural base. So they are cultural, social conservatives who also... on economic positions are not really allied to corporate capitalism or the Wall Street Journal view of what's good for America.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things, and I want to close with this, is because what you've said, I think, is so important for people to start exploring. Some of the, you've mm-hmm. written books on this. Chronicles talks about this. When I discovered some of this, it was like I was fulfilled in a way that I
right.
hadn't been before.
Right.
And everything else seems so flat on the political right. But we're in a dire position right now trying to resist this woke incursion.
Right.
This is
right.
terrible. And the assumption that a lot of conservatives, people self-proclaimed conservatives, seem to take is that, and evangelicals in particular, is that, you know, this is going to get so crazy, people are just going to abandon it, as if the moderates in the center mm-hmm, are mm-hmm. going to restore order and reject wokeism. And I don't see that happening anywhere. It always seems like it's like the rainbow. It's right around the bend. You know, the next mm-hmm. innovation of the left is the last one they'll have because we'll realize we'll be on to them. You've said something in a recent interview. You said that the change never comes from the center. And I just wanted you to expand on that a little. Where does the change come from for if you want to, you know, resist this?
Well, I mean, the change in this case is going to come from two sources. One is going to be the right, and you need a right that hangs tough. That you know, these are our principles. We do not accept gay marriage. This is an utter perversion of marriage. This transgendered people are mentally ill. You know, the dysphoria is my son is a physician. You know, it's like telling somebody that it has, I've one extra arm, cut one of my arms off. Or these people obviously need all kinds of spiritual, mental counseling, but to treat them, you know, as respected victims of society or people of special is insane. Anti-white racism has to be ended. And, you know, people have Confederate flags, there's proud, so fine. You know, as I say, blacks may have a different historical narrative from whites. That doesn't mean we have to cancel the whites' narrative. Southern whites have at least the same, and they've been in this country, and they certainly have the same rights as black people do. They have the same right to their history, they have the same right to honor their ancestors. So, I mean, all of this has to be ended, I would argue, this double standard against white people, against white Christians, against Southerners, this all has to be ended. Attempts to pull down monuments, all of this has to be treated as criminal activity by organized vandals. And by the way, I consider this to be every bit as dangerous as what the Nazis did in Germany. I see very little difference. And they just get away with it again and again with riots, anything they wanted. This has to be ended. And there is no reason to apologize for it. I also don't believe that Americans have to weep over January 6th. I think this narrative has been blown up in order to justify giving more power to police state against the rest of us.
Yeah.
So, but the other thing that I think we can count, at some point, the left is going to fall apart because of the incompatible elements that make up the left. I don't see Muslim fundamentalists and homosexuals in any kind of long-term alliance, or black nationalists and feminists. None of this makes any sense to me. All that holds them together is hate. They hate normal white male Christians or something like that.
And that's intersectionality right there.
Yeah.
It's just a complicated way to hate.
Complicated nonsense.
Yeah.
I mean, and it is going to fall apart. The right, though, has to hang tough in the meantime. Don't make any concessions. and make it very clear to the American people, and this is going on in Europe, by the way, in Western Europe, in Canada, as well as in the United States, make it clear that this is our position, you know, and we're not going to compromise.
Yeah.
And if they, you know, they're going to get a lot worse. We haven't even seen it, and they're going to rig elections and do everything else, you know, if they can get away with this. But yeah. I think it has to. But I think at some there'll be a breaking point. I also think a point will come when even these soccer moms will become annoyed.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't believe deeply in their morality or political capacities, but. At some point, you know, their family lives are going to be...
Well, Moms for Liberty is already doing
right.
some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that I just thought of as you were describing that in the Christian world is Christian nationalism. Nature abhors a vacuum, and when we are leaderless, it seems to me that the Christian nationalism movement mm-hmm. is rising up to fill that vacuum and try to restore some of these things that have, that you're talking about. Like,
right.
They're very aggressive stands on marriage. Stephen Wolf, you know, is one of the leaders in that. And I don't. We don't have time to get your full take on Christian nationalism, but do you see hope in things like that? That these are the things that are going to push back.
Yeah. Well, the I assume the Catholic and Protestant Christian nationalists are divided.
Okay.
but the Protestant ones make more sense because America's founded as a Protestant country, right?
Right.
So I mean, it sort of goes back to the origins of the country. but I think that. There is a good chance for this to make headway, and I think there is a lot of room on the right, on the real right, not on Ben Shapiro and Sean Hannity, but on the real right, I think there's room for more movements, yeah. and I think they can cooperate. You know, the populists and the Christian nationalists can cooperate.
Yeah.
But the most important thing is not to make concessions to the left, right? No more concessions. And you have to just hang tough. These are our positions.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Gottfried, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.